Hello and welcome to Pythagorean Astronomy. I'm Chris North, and what you're about to listen to was originally broadcast as part of Pythagoras' Trousers, a science and engineering show on Radio Cardiff. You can find a full show and listen to past episodes at pythagorastrousers.co.uk. But for now, here's this month's astronomy. This month I'm recording from Astrocamp, a star party just north of Crickhowell in Powys, and I'm joined by Paul Hill, one of the organisers, so welcome again, Paul.
Hello there.
Very briefly, what's the best thing about astronomy?
Best thing about astronomy? That's a really difficult question to ask because there is so much that is brilliant about it. It's seeing the universe, it's being outside and seeing something so much bigger and greater than ourselves and just seeing things that are actually beyond your imagination, that you find things like nebulae and things that you couldn't possibly have thought of, and you see it, and you're seeing it from your back garden, from a field somewhere, you know, without anything particularly special, just a little telescope, and you can see nice amazing things.
And what's the best thing about Astrocamp?
Oh, it's the friends, it's the people that are here and the fun we have. We didn't have any astronomy. It rained most of the time, but everyone still had a fantastic time because everyone's here sharing their passion for it and their knowledge and their tips and things like that. And that's brilliant. I mean, people are just really friendly and have great fun.
What got you into astronomy?
It was a very, very keen primary school teacher when I was about 7 or 8 years old, and we did space as a topic, and it was a time when Halley's Comet was doing its pass, and unfortunately the Challenger disaster, but of course to a small child that was still fascinating, and that got me into space and astronomy, and then I started watching things like The Sky at Night, and I met Patrick Moore, and I just sort of snowballed from there, really.
Cheers, Paul.
No problem.
I'm joined now by Eva, age 6. Eva, what's the best thing about astronomy?
Probably doing it with my daddy.
Yeah. And what's the best thing about Astrocamp?
Well, it's probably seeing all the fun, seeing some people I like, seeing every May and September.
Wonderful. Why did you start doing astronomy, do you think?
Probably because of my daddy.
What are you looking forward to looking at?
The Plough, the Andromeda Galaxy, and yeah, that's it really.
Brilliant. Well, sounds like a fun night ahead. Well, the sky's darkening. The stars are slowly coming out. Cries earlier about the Plough has been spotted, and there I can see it, the Plough, part of Ursa Major, up in the sky, pointing to the North Star, so I'll shortly have to go and align my own telescope to see what I can see. The moon slowly setting behind the hills, and it is looking like it's going to be a good night. I thought I'd go and speak to a few other people about what's great about astronomy. Right, Vicky's here now. So, Vicky, what's the best thing about astronomy?
Astronomy, it's just so humbling. I really like learning new things all the time, and that's definitely what I'm doing right now. I'm currently being taught how to use a new tracker that I have, which is fantastic.
What's the best thing about Astrocamp?
The fact that I can bring new kit like that to places like this, and it's so friendly. Everybody's just so lovely and eager and willing to help you get on your feet and figure out your new stuff and show you how you're misusing your old stuff. It's great.
What got you into astronomy in the first place?
It was actually Patrick Moore talking about the Perseids when I was a small child, because it's kind of around the same time as my birthday. So I was like, and I nagged my dad for hours one day just to let me stay up and see a few, and then he did, and that was it.
So, John, what's the best thing about astronomy?
The best thing about astronomy, I think it's getting a real perspective on the universe. I don't see how any astronomer can have an ego, because you realise how insignificant we all are and how much more there is out in the universe.
What's the best thing about Astrocamp this weekend?
The best thing about Astrocamp, I love coming to these weekends. It's getting so many people together of so many different levels and experiences, and everybody just joining together, having fun, and sharing the night sky.
What got you into astronomy in the first place, do you think?
I remember sitting out in the dark as a small child and being bought a very cheap, very small telescope and spending hours staring at the moon. And it kind of fell away from me as I got older and moved to the big city. And I injured my back and ended up watching enormous amounts of reruns of The Sky at Night and various other kind of astronomy-related programmes, and went, well, they're doing things from the centre of London. If you can do it from the centre of London, then why not? So I bought myself a telescope.
Well, of course, it's not just amateur astronomy going on. There's also professional astronomy going on all the time. A story out from Cardiff astronomers this last month, who've been leading a study using data from the Herschel Space Observatory, amongst others, on how galaxies change their shape over time. I spoke to Matt Smith and Matt Allen, both at Cardiff, about what they've been learning about the metamorphosis of galaxies. Let's start off with Matt Smith first. So tell us the basics, first of all. When we talk about a galaxy, what do we mean?
Okay, so when we think of a galaxy, we're thinking about a collection of stars that are gravitationally bound together, so they're all stuck together. So if we our star is in our own galaxy, which we call the Milky Way, and all the stars you can see in the sky are pretty much 99.9% all stars in our own galaxy. But when we look out in space, there is billions and billions of other galaxies.
Now, Matt Allen, we when we look at galaxies, we look out and we see the light that they've emitted, but we're not seeing them as they are now. We're seeing them as they were a while ago. Why is that?
Well, the really key thing about astronomy is that there's something called the speed of light, and this means that light doesn't travel instantaneously. It actually takes a certain amount of time for light to travel from one place to another, and it's very, very quick. But when you're talking about the distance on a universe scale between galaxies, we're talking about light taking thousands, millions, or billions of years to travel. So when we look at something very close, such as Andromeda, we're perhaps seeing what it looked like millions of years ago. But when we look at really, really distant galaxies, we're actually seeing what they look like billions or tens of billions of years ago. And so when we look at different distances of galaxies, we're seeing what they look like at different points in the past. And so this is the way that we basically do astronomy and we can do astrophysics, is we can see how things have evolved and changed by looking at galaxies and objects at different distances away from us, and hence different times away that the light left those galaxies to reach us here.
So when we look in the night sky, we think of, as you say, we're seeing stars in our own galaxy, but galaxies themselves come in different shapes and sizes. So Matt Allen, galaxies are not all the same in any way.
No. I mean, they're all completely different by their shape and size. Some of you be known about all the flat disks galaxies we get, and they're the beautiful spiral arms in them. But you also get these really big, round, elliptical, sort of spherical galaxies. You can also get weird, irregularly shaped galaxies. But it's not just their shapes. They all create different numbers of stars. They all have different amounts of gas and dust in them. So all the different types of galaxies are all individual and unique.
And galaxies do come in these various types. You mentioned these spiral shapes, these elliptical ball shapes are the two main types. And over the past 100 years or so, astronomers have been trying to categorise these. We had Edwin Hubble came up with what he called his tuning fork of how you categorise galaxies into these round elliptical ones, which are big balls, and these flat spiral disks. And what's the relationship between these round elliptical galaxies and these flat spiral galaxies, Matt?
Well, so we know when we look in the universe around us today, there's about 50% of stars are in these elliptical forms. And if we look at the nearby universe, the disks, they all tend to be blue in colour, and that means that they're still star forming. They're new, they have a lot of gas which collects to form these new stars, but the ellipticals tend to be red and they tend to be dead, as in they're not forming new stars.
You've mentioned nearby universe and distant universe. Give us a sense of scale here, because these distances are much bigger than anything we're used to on Earth.
Yeah, I mean, it's very difficult to comprehend, because even the nearby scale, we're talking galaxies at 3 million light years away. So it's taken like over 3 million years to travel from them to us. Actually, in the furthest galaxies, we're talking about light that has taken about 3 billion years to reach us.
We look at the colour of these galaxies. So the blue galaxies tells us they're forming stars. Why is that? That's because of the types of stars they're forming.
Yes, because they've just formed a whole load of new stars, and that includes some very big, very bright and very hot stars, and they tend to emit more in the ultraviolet, which gives them a more bluer colour. than smaller stars. But because they're really big and burning really hot, they die off quite quickly. And so the ellipticals are just galaxies that you're just left with the cold red stars. But the question is, up to now, we didn't really have an idea how you go from having these star-forming galaxies to creating these big ellipticals, which presumably formed all their stars a long time ago. We know the process had to be quick because we don't see any of these intermediate galaxies. And this study kind of looking at the far universe to try and work out what were the progenitors of all these ellipticals.
So this is because galaxies, we don't think, form in two different shapes. These are galaxies in different stages of their evolution, of their lives. And Matt Allen, what's the latest thinking about what the changes are that go on there between the spirals and ellipticals?
Well, it's always been a bit blurry, but we seem to think now from our research that you start off in the early universe with these beautiful disks, these sort of really well-structured disk spiral galaxies, and that somehow they somehow transform into these big round elliptical ones. And there's lots of different theories of how you can do it, but some of the ideas are things such as two of these spiral disk galaxies actually smashing into each other. And as they smash into each other, all the stars sort of get all random motions and they all start spinning around, and this is how you get these big round elliptical galaxies. There are also a lot of other ideas, such as all the small clumps of stars and the disks moving towards the centre, and they sort of build up this big bulge towards the centre. But there are loads and loads of different ideas of how galaxies can form and how they can evolve between each other. So it's still a little bit of a mystery.
The spiral structures we see in galaxies are beautiful. You look up in the night sky and you have a telescope, you can see the Andromeda galaxy. You see astrophotographers taking pictures of it all the time. You can see on a clear night the spiral arms of our galaxy. And these are absolutely wonderful to look at. If you go online, you can find countless pictures of spiral galaxies. Do we have a feel for how those spirals form, Matt Smith?
So when these spirals tend to have a lot of gas in them. So as you're accreting this gas, so it's taking in the gas from, in general, space between galaxies, because of the motion and the rotation, that rotation and how much the mass is rotating, what we call conservation of angular momentum, that tends to form into a disk. And those disks then form stars, and those stars then continue rotating around with the gas.
And the spiral arms are essentially, we think, processes going on within the disk that causes a lot of the spiral arms?
We think it's due to a density wave where new stars are formed, and then in that process a lot of material is then pushed together, and that forms a whole new load of stars going around, and it's kind of like a wave going around the galaxy which forms these spiral arms.
And we don't actually know how long these spiral arms last for, right? I mean, they could be very very brief existences of spiral arms. They could change very quickly or relatively quickly on universal time, so they could hang around for billions of years. We don't really have a feel for that.
No. And again, because of a lot of the evolution between these spirals, and when they merge together, you lose all of this structure. In the short term, you know, these giant interactions and mergers of systems can just wipe out all these spiral arms. And there's lots of different types of spiral arms as well. So again, they're also still a little bit of a mystery as to their kind of lifetime.
One of the problems we have with looking at galaxies is that it would be great to look at them and see how they change over their lives, but of course these things last for billions of years, and we've been looking at them in detail for 100 years or thereabouts. So we haven't really got a feel. We see a snapshot of galaxies. So how do we take snapshots of individual galaxies, some which are big, some which are small, some which are far away and we're seeing as they were a long time ago, some which are nearby and we're seeing as they are much closer to the present day? How do we get a feel for building up that cosmic picture? Because that's a complex challenge for astronomers.
Okay, so the way we try and attempt this is by, instead of just looking at individual galaxies, we try and take surveys of huge numbers of galaxies. So in this research we're talking about here, they actually combined several thousand galaxies, both in the nearby universe, but also looking at Hubble data, which goes back to the very earliest times of the universe. And so by looking at these large numbers, instead of just looking at what one individual galaxy is doing at any one point, we look at the whole collection. Like at this time in the universe, are most of them in this stage or in this stage? And then we try and build up a big picture of how the universe has changed.
The latest research that's come out telling us about how galaxies are changing has combined lots of information from lots of telescopes. It's primarily been the Herschel Space Observatory, but also part of a bigger survey comprising lots of wavelengths. And Matt Allen, why is looking at lots of different types of light so important?
Well, in galaxies, things at different temperatures emit a different wavelength of light. So very, very hot things typically release really high energy. And so this is very short wavelengths of things like gamma and X-ray radiation. And processes that are very cold and quite stagnant, perhaps, emit sort of longer wavelengths, so things like infrared and radio. And so if we want to study all the different components of a galaxy and all the different interactions and processes within a galaxy, we really need to study all the different wavelengths. So when we look at optical, for example, we're looking at the stars, most of the light that's emitted from the stars. When we look in the infrared, we're looking at the dust component. When we look at the X-ray and the gamma, perhaps we're seeing evidence of the black hole at the centre. So by comparing and adding on all of this data together and all the different wavelengths of light, we can see all the processes within a galaxy and how they interact with each other and how these processes form the galaxy overall.
And by looking at these galaxies, what you've shown is that they do seem to turn from spirals into elliptical galaxies. As you mentioned, there could be any number of ways of doing that. And what's the evidence for saying that this is what happens?
So in this research, what we've done is we've taken our nearby sample galaxies and looked at where stars are forming in the nearby universe, and we find it's all, as expected, in disks. But what we've also done is now looked at the high redshift universe, so the very first galaxies. What we find is looking at galaxy shapes in the early universe, all the stars are still being formed in disks. So at some point, they're not forming stars in these elliptical shapes. They're definitely forming in disks. So we know at this point that these elliptical galaxies must have originated from these disk shape.
So the stars are all forming in these disks in the early universe, and now we look at the present universe. So billions of years ago, lots of spiral galaxies forming stars, and nowadays we see some spiral galaxies forming stars, but some of those spiral galaxies must have turned into the massive elliptical galaxies we see around us. So.
Yes, basically we don't find at any point how any evidence of star formation going on in elliptical shapes, and we can tell that for a variety of means. So we know how much is formed in total by measuring what we call the total background, and by looking at our samples we can say we account for the total amount of star formation going on, and we know all our galaxies are in disks, so there's no evidence at any point that stars have been formed in these spheroidal structures.
So we know that galaxies are changing over time. And what does that tell us about the future of our galaxy, Matt Allen? Because we live in a spiral galaxy, the Milky Way, and we have a nearby neighbour, the Andromeda Galaxy.
We're safe for a while. I mean, none of us will ever experience this, but in billions and billions of years' time, the Andromeda Galaxy and our own galaxy, Milky Way, are set to collide with each other. And it won't be as catastrophic as you imagine. You know, you can't imagine that many of these stars are actually going to hit each other, as most of the space inside a galaxy is actually empty. But overall, the gravitational interactions of these two galaxies smashing into each other will disturb both their shapes. And both Andromeda and the Milky Way are the beautiful flat disk spiral galaxies. And so what's going to happen is when they collide together, they'll lose all of these beautiful shapes. And they will probably, as we found in this study, form something like a big round elliptical galaxy. We don't know for sure. And there are a lot of other different types of galaxies. They can also form into regular shaped galaxies, which take on lots of different shapes. So it could be that we go into one of these, but chances are we could go into an elliptical galaxy as well.
Okay, so this is in about 5 billion years, so we've got a while.
We're okay for the moment, no need to worry.
This study has been using the Herschel Space Observatory. It was mentioned earlier that we look in the infrared to see the cold stuff in galaxies. Why are we looking in the infrared at these galaxies?
So it's actually very important to look at the full wavelength ranges, particularly the infrared. And the reason is that we really want to understand the star formation. And as we said earlier, you look for the big stars, the hot stars, that give out loads of ultraviolet, which would be great. So you could just add up all the ultraviolet. But the problem is, in galaxies, there's this stuff that we call cosmic dust. And it's not like the house dust you can see around your house. It's a lot smaller particles. It's a bit more like smoke. And the problem is, it absorbs all this UV and hides it. So we can't look at it in the ultraviolet. But because it absorbs all that light, it heats up a little bit. So if we look at a fine infrared camera with Herschel, we're looking at dust that is about 20 Kelvin. That's minus 250 degrees Celsius.
Pretty chilly.
Pretty cold. But that's enough heat that we can then measure it. So it's just like an infrared camera looking for heat in like a human, but a lot colder, so we have to go to a slightly longer wavelength. And all that energy, if we didn't account for it, we miss a huge amount of star formation. So overall in the universe, half the light has been stolen from the ultraviolet and the optical and then is re-emitted in this infrared. And it's particularly important if you're looking at some very big star-forming galaxies, because the dust tends to be mixed with gas, and as gas forms stars, you have these massive galaxies, which some of them don't give out any optical or UV light. And so all that energy is given out in the far infrared. So if you want a full picture of star formation in the universe, you have to use the dust.
It's certainly been an interesting result to see how galaxies can change over time from these spirals into ellipticals. And I guess there's more to come as we look at more galaxies and get a better feeling for exactly what is going on. So Matt Smith, Matt Adam, thanks very much.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Well, while those developments have been taking place, I'm back here at Cwm Dŷ at the Astro Camp, and the moon is pretty much set. The sky is looking really dark. Looking forward to seeing the Milky Way come out overhead. Certainly see a lot of stars. It looks like it's a good night for observing. So let's find out what others are planning on getting up to. Jules, what's the best thing for you about astronomy?
Just being able to just be outside and take in the whole sky and just... I don't know, it's just a wonderful feeling, just feeling like very small and being able to like look into the distance and imagine what's out there, and that's about it really. The best thing about AstroCamp is definitely the fact that a lot of people together, all with the same interest, everybody's so excited about the same thing, everybody else loves sitting under this fantastic sky and taking it all in and just enjoying every minute of it. It's just fabulous.
What got you into astronomy in the first place?
That's quite easy, actually, because when I was little, I used to watch Sky at Night with my granddad, and it used to be my treat going to my grandparents, because my family and my parents were never into that kind of thing, but my granddad really was. So it was like watching that and then just sort of getting into it that way, really.
Right, so Harvey, you're age 14. What's the best thing about astronomy?
I have to say looking at all the celestial objects, definitely. Cool. Like seeing Saturn and stuff.
What's the best thing about AstroCamp this weekend?
All the cool people are here.
All the cool people are here, that sounds good. What got you into astronomy?
My mum.
Brilliant. Jenny Millard's here now, based at Cardiff, of course, undergraduate, going to your final year. Just spent the summer a little further away than mid-Wales.
Indeed, I've just come back from 13 weeks in Australia, working with the Australian Astronomical Observatory, or the AAO, which is based just outside of Sydney, but all their telescopes and things are based in a place called Coonabarabran, and you have no idea how many times I had to repeat that to myself before I got it correct. And that's about a 7-hour drive from Sydney itself.
In the middle of the sticks?
Completely in the middle of the sticks. So they say Coonabarabran is the nearest town, but that itself, I think it's about a 45-minute drive away. There's nothing nearby. It's completely dark. There's very little light pollution on the horizon. It's amazing.
Get any observing done out there?
Well, you'd think, wouldn't you? But we were only up there for a couple of days, and it was clouded over for the entire time we were there, and it snowed.
Not so good for astronomy.
No.
What for you would you say is the best thing about astronomy then?
Best thing about astronomy... is I think the fact that it's just so raw, and it's you're seeing stuff with your own eyes. I mean, it's all very good going onto Google and saying, oh, I'll have a look at Andromeda, oh, look at all the pretty stars, that's great. But then, you know, doing astronomy yourself, you actually get to see it with your own eyes, and you're looking, you know, sometimes even you look back in the past. I mean, even if it's, you know, you're looking at nebulas and things, and they're so far away that their light takes thousands and thousands of years to reach you, so you can actually be a real life time traveller. You haven't got to wait for Doctor Who to turn up.
Excellent. What's the best thing about AstroCamp here this weekend?
The best thing about AstroCamp this weekend will definitely be the pub quiz, I think, down at the Village Hall. That's always really good fun, really good prizes. But I think overall, just the friendly atmosphere. I mean, we don't come here just for the amazing skies. We come here to see all our friends, catch up, talk about things we've been getting up to, share tips, share, you know, everything. It's so much fun.
How did you get into astronomy in the first place?
I can't remember a time when I wasn't interested in the stars. I say to a lot of people, what's the first thing you do when you get out of a car? Most people say, oh, I don't know, I look for my phone, I look for my keys. Whatever. First thing that I do is I look up at the sky. and I see what I can see. I've always done that, and I think that's what got me interested in astronomy, just being able to look up and see all these beautiful things.
It is a mark of an astronomer, actually, when you see people, astronomers walk out of a house or a car, you often see them immediately look
straight up. Yeah, is it clear? What can I see? What's that?
So, John, what's the best thing about astronomy for you?
It's something very much like my daughter. I've always been interested in the night sky. I mean, my first telescope I bought many years ago, and I sort of skirted around it. But Jenny came along, and she gathered a bit of interest in it. So, and it took off from there. And yeah, I love it. You know, you look out, and you do wonder what's out there. You know, and to see objects, imaging in particular, because when Jenny images, you know, a nebula, Orion Nebula, it's just this very faint object. But the minute you zoom in, the colours come out, and it's, you know, you're looking at something that's so distant, you know, and it just fascinates me, always has, yeah.
What's the best thing about AstroCamp this weekend?
AstroCamp is always good for information and learning, and people are always willing to give you advice, whatever it is, that, you know, whether you're a newcomer or maybe, you know, a little bit more professional, but there's always people there that can take you to the next stage, and also finding your way around the sky. People are always, you know, it amazes me how some people know the objects out there. They know the numbers, and you know, and it's great. Yeah.
What got you into astronomy in the first place, do you think?
Well, it's something. It's hard to explain, really. It's just a fascination for the night sky. You know, and that burning question, are we alone? You know, are we alone out there? But obviously we're taking early steps into that. But it's, you look up, you know, and there are these twinkling objects, you know, and you wonder what is there. So you can only see so much with the naked eye. And getting the telescopes out is, you know, a way of looking perhaps a little bit deeper. And it brings the sky alive as well. You know, you can see so many stars with naked eye, but you put a telescope up there and it just comes alive. Yeah.
Normally, of course, I speak to Hugh Lang about what's coming up in the sky ahead, but since I'm here with a field full of amateur astronomers, I thought I'd ask them about what they're going to look at over tonight and the next month.
The end of September, we've got the total eclipse. Really looking forward to that, total lunar eclipse. Haven't seen one for a very, very long time, so really looking forward to that, although it's a very early morning. I'm looking forward to the triple conjunction through sort of October, where we've got Venus, Jupiter and Mars all coming together, but again, really early in the morning, so it's going to be lots of very late nights in astronomy over the next few weeks. But I mean, that's going to be pretty spectacular. It's going to be hard to beat this season, I think, the triple conjunction.
What are you looking forward to looking at, do you think?
Tonight, everything, because it's just so crystal clear here. But when I get back home, it'll probably be galaxies. I love galaxies. Tiny, fuzzy blobs.
Any favourites?
Andromeda's a clear favourite, and now I've got the tracker for my camera. I want to have a go at getting some images of that and really trying to pull out some detail if I can.
My personal favourite, I'm looking forward to seeing Orion again at a reasonable time. He's like an old friend in the sky, so like looking forward to seeing him again, really. But lots of other things. I mean, there's so much to see up there. Similar to Vicky, really, like the galaxies, that's one of my favourite, and globular clusters, I love that kind of thing. I'm not particularly deep sky person, but just like wide field, I love like just taking in the whole sky and doing like wide field photography.
And that just needs a camera.
Yeah, absolutely. And here is just the best place. You know, the Milky Way is stunning here. It's just like jumps out naked eye without any camera, so it's just fabulous.
What are you looking forward to looking at either tonight or over the coming months?
So at AstroCamp, my target is the Dumbbell Nebula. I've imaged it before. It's my imaging target this time. At other camps, I've looked at a few different things. I've imaged a few different objects, but this time I really want to focus on the Dumbbell.
So that's the remains of a dead star, right?
Yes, yeah, it's absolutely beautiful. It's kind of like a blue-green colour. It's almost like an eye shape. more than an oval, and then but then at the edges it's got bits of red and stuff, and it's absolutely gorgeous. And it's quite bright, so it's quite easy to see. Even if you've got a very small telescope, you can find it. So that's what I'm planning on imaging, and then views-wise, I don't know, I'm just going to hop around and see what I can see what I can't.
Well, tonight, I want to look at Andromeda. That's the one I want to look at. I want to look at Andromeda.
So that's the Andromeda Galaxy?
The Andromeda Galaxy, yeah.
So taking pictures or just looking at it with your eyes?
No, I'm just going to be looking. Yeah, yeah. Jenny has stolen the camera from me, so I will be just looking. And then I'll have a wander around and see a few other things.
What are you looking forward to observing over the next month?
Over the next month, especially from somewhere dark like here, I'm looking forward to the Veil Nebula. The Ring Nebula is always one that is a bit of a standout object, I think. And I'm really looking forward to Orion coming back. The Orion Nebula is a thing of beauty that everybody should see.
You've been listening to Pythagorean Astronomy with me, Chris North. It was originally broadcast on Radio Cardiff as part of Pythagoras' Trousers.